The information included in this podcast is for informational purposes only. Nothing discussed here is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, and never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you heard on this podcast.
Everyone, this is Victoria Porter. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. You're listening to the Healthy Hot Springs podcast from the Razorback Campercell Studios. Health is our most important asset, and on this show, I sit down with local health professionals to discuss opportunities and strategies for you to get healthy hot springs. Today in the studio, I would like to welcome Kathy Staten. She is a psychologist in private practice here in Hot Springs. Welcome, Kathy.
Thank you so much for having me here today, Victoria.
It is a pleasure. As you know, I know you. We're colleagues in the same wonderful building here at Lindell Square in downtown. So we get to see each other, so that's wonderful. But tell our listeners a little about yourself and just kind of what we're going to talk about today.
Okay, so let's see. I grew up in Texas.
Oh, wow,
and so, you know, don't hold that against me. And met my husband and went to school here in Arkansas, and so kind of been here off and on ever since.
Yeah.
Got my undergraduate degree in psychology. Actually, my first career was in ministry. I have seminary degrees and worked in churches for a long time. But through that, saw a lot of need. Mm-hmm. You know, parents saying, I can't handle this child. They're running wild, or marriages falling apart, or trauma. Oh, I've got a family member who's addicted, or I've got a family member who's suicidal. What do I do? And I felt really unequipped to handle all that, even though it was coming to me. And I decided I want to be equipped for these types of questions and to equip others to handle these types of things. And so went back to school, got my doctorate at the UCA here in Conway. And so have been practicing and in private practice here in Hot Springs since 2019.
Okay.
And so a lot of my practice focuses on trauma and helping people recover and retrain their brains around trauma and what's happened from with trauma. So
Okay, so I love that we're going to talk about trauma today. And it's such a topic so much in the world, period. Even for ourselves, though, with, you know, COVID and everything that's going on, people who I think would say I haven't normally experienced trauma now have experienced trauma related to, you know, the pandemic and things that we've been through. So let's just start with some basics. And for a listener who doesn't really understand kind of the concept of trauma in mental health, can you just kind of start there?
Sure.
And just what would that be like if I thought, okay, maybe I do need some help with this, right?
Right. So the first question is well, is that a trauma? You know, I get that kind of thing all the time of, well, you know, that was bad and I'm feeling bad about that, but I know that's not as bad as what someone else has experienced, kind of thing. And so there's the question of, well, what is trauma? What makes it a trauma? And so, I mean, just definition-wise, there's in practice, there's what we call little T traumas and big T traumas. Mm-hmm. And little T are those smaller things that you might not think are traumatic, but are traumatic to you. And this could be, you know, the words a bully said to you when you were 10 years old, or how a teacher embarrassed you in front of the class when you were a teenager, and that still comes to your mind, or you still feel that in your body, or it still impacts you. And other people might be, that's, that's not really a trauma. That's, you know, that's something little. You can get over that. But every person has a different reaction and response to things. And what can be traumatic to one person may not be traumatic to another person. And so, yeah, that bully or that teacher, whatever, might have been traumatic mm-hmm. to one person. But we would call those the smaller, little T kind of traumas. And there's lots of things that can fall into that. And then there's big T, which are pretty obvious. You know, those are your natural disasters and war and car wreck that mm-hmm. you know, totally hits your everything that in your life, your finances, your body, your mind and emotions and your relationships. And then we have those combinations where there's people that have both big T and little T mm-hmm. Going on in their lives. And actually that little T could be impacting how hard the big T hit. So,
mm-hmm. But I think a lot of what we do, and it is important to point this out, that whatever you are going through mm-hmm. is the hardest thing, right? Mm-hmm. And I think people try and, you know, I see this a lot in grief where they're like, you know, I feel bad having such a hard time because mm-hmm. I know other people have been through mm-hmm. such hard mm-hmm. things, and I'm like, no, what you're going through is the hardest thing you have ever been through. Yeah. And until you have experienced maybe a big T, the little T impacts you perhaps as much as a big T to someone else, right?
Right, right.
So I think we have to stop that comparing.
Yeah.
Yes.
And some questions to kind of ask yourself as you're thinking through is this traumatic or am I just, you know, is this just an anxiety or is this just something I'm going to be able to get over? Is asking, well, you know, how long ago did this happen? Is it still impacting me?
And impacting me how? Like right. What would that look
yeah.
like?
So, and this is where we would make the definition from clinical versus a non-clinical mm-hmm. type of diagnosis, or someone that we would work with versus someone, no, you know, give it time, I think you're going to be fine, is one thing we look at, well, how distressing is it? Is it distressing to you? You know, as you think about it, is it distressing to you? And no one can define that for you other than you. No one can say, that's not distressing to you. No, is it distressing to you? That's the first thing you look mm-hmm. at. Is it distressing to you? And then second, does it impact your functioning in some way? Mm-hmm. Is it shutting down a relationship? Is it making you angry? Is it hurting your emotions? Is it keeping you in bed? Is it hurting your productivity? Is it in some way impacting your functioning? You're eating too much, or you're eating too little, mm-hmm. or you're, you know, how is this thing impacting your functioning? Is it causing distress? And if you answer, you know, yes, or even a partial yes to that, chances are maybe this is going on to traumatic. And then let's talk about the symptoms that we look for mm-hmm. in someone with trauma or even post-traumatic stress disorder. Mm-hmm. One of the symptoms that we look at is what we call hypervigilance, mm. in which it's kind of on alert, kind of uptight, anxious, looking around your surroundings, seeing where there's danger, and it may not even be consciously doing mm-hmm. it, but subconsciously.
And I think it's important to point out that those happen in that. That would happen in, not whenever you're walking down an alley, right? Mm-hmm. That's going to happen like someone...
That's,
you know,
natural.
Just, right, yes.
Yeah, that would be expected.
Someone described it to me, you know, I walked in the doctor's office with my children and, you know, immediately looked for where the exits are, you mm-hmm. know, just mm-hmm. in case something bad happened,
right?
So,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's a physiological experience. Well, you're going to... That fight or flight mm-hmm. type feeling, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. right?
Or even freeze.
Yes.
If you do, you go into freeze mode.
Yes.
That would be a sign of some hypervigilance.
Yes.
So a second symptom that we look at is what we call re-experiencing, where a smell reminds you of it and you're thinking about that thing that happened, or the sound, or a thought just keeps going through your mind, or an image just keeps going through your mind, or you keep dreaming about it, or, you know, that person sounds like them, and you try to, you know,
and you
just
feel like
re-experiencing it.
And you have no control to stop that.
No, right. It's very unwanted. Yeah. That actually gets us to our third symptom, which is avoidance, in which I don't want to think about that. I don't want to feel that. I don't want to be anxious and hypervigilant, and you do everything you can to try to avoid or stay away from.
Yes.
And avoidance can look like a million different things. Yes. Again, every person's avoidance it probably has some difference to it to somebody else. For some people, it's all out drugs, alcohol,
shopping, gambling,
yeah. gaming, shutting off emotions, not watching TV, just simply not watching TV, not hanging out with a certain group of people. Some of it even seems productive or nice in the workplace. Oh, I'm just going to work more. Right, I'm going to work myself to death.
An acceptable avoidance we're seeing now is just kind of immersing yourself in social media, where you dive in there for a couple of hours, and you're like, wow, I don't, you know, I didn't have to think about that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So whenever we have experienced a trauma, and we're like, okay, so perhaps I do need some help with this. What would be the next step in terms of whenever we, as far as treatment goes? And I will so I am not an EMDR brain spotting trained professional, and you are, and I'm so fascinated by this work. And so whenever we are, if someone comes to you and has a trauma, just kind of walk me through that process a little bit. How do you know, like, what type of treatment?
Right. Like everyone's responses to trauma are different, and even their avoidance to symptoms may be different. How we treat it, even though we've got these great sets of tools, how we apply them and when we use them may be different from person to person. So there could be some people that come in and they're actually coming in because their marriage is ending or because they're having problems at work. But then as we're in the session, it becomes obvious to me, no, this is actually trauma. This is where the symptoms are interfering in their functioning, and this is the fallout. And so with that person, we actually have to start with some time of discovery and some time of insight and some psychoeducation and understanding of what trauma is and how it's impacting them before we can actually get to, we're going to treat trauma. And they're like, what? No, I'm here
getting a divorce, right?
So sometimes that's stabilizing or beginning with, you know, what that thing is that they came in there for. Okay, let's stabilize this work situation, or let's work through this and work through that with them, you know, with the same time in an educational and talking about, you know, what's kind of at the core, the root of it. They could get to that stabilization place and decide, you know, I'm not ready to work on the trauma yet. I'm feeling fine for now, and that's great. Mm-hmm. Others might be, I can see where this is going to impact me. It keeps impacting other areas of my life, and so let's do some trauma therapy. So I mean, we could start out literally with, we don't even know we have trauma.
Especially for people like we're talking about numbing. Someone who's been, you know, numbing this for possibly even years.
Yeah.
And what you're doing to numb the feelings is often so much worse for your life than actually addressing the trauma. You know, there's that statement, we can't heal what we don't feel.
Right.
So we've been trying not to feel all of these emotions for this whole time. But that's our work, right?
You're
going to come in and you're going to feel some stuff.
So another group that comes in is, they have an idea that there's something really wrong here.
Right.
It's not just this one thing or this one thing. And so with them, we kind of have an idea, here's trauma symptoms. Yeah, I think I meet those. And usually even then, I don't start right out with an EMDR or brain spotting.
Okay.
We start with what I call resiliency skills or resourcing skills, because with a trauma therapy, you are changing the brain. And with brain change, the rest of your system has to be on board with that. Your body has to be on board with that. Your emotions really need to be caught up with that. And so I don't like to just jump right in to an EMDR or brain spotting, which can be pretty rapid in healing it. We have to give your system a chance to keep up with your brain. And so first I'll spend 4 or 5 sessions teaching what I call resiliency skills. And these are everyday use types of skills that they can use in their work, in their home, in their relationships. And this is giving them a chance to regulate emotions in a new way. This is giving them a chance to start changing mindset every single day. Giving them a chance to, regulate their bodies and change their thought patterns.
From negative, what this negative thought, because it starts there, right?
So there's a negative thought there. I don't even realize that negative thought, such as that's dangerous. That might be playing there and you don't even know it. And so it's first noticing the thought. Oh, now what do I do with that thought? And actually then changing the thought. I give those tools to my clients first, most of the time. Now, there are times where I've had clients just come in and it was in such a state that we jumped right in, but those are rare for me.
Yeah. There was a specific incident that it's easy to identify.
They're really having
a hard time.
And the only way we will get to the skills is we need to clear out some of the the surface trauma first. So
get them functioning.
Get them functioning and less in distress. We call that activation, right? Yeah. And we have a window or an of what we call tolerance.
And people's tolerance is different, right? Mm-hmm. You know, as we were talking about before. And I love this idea of post-traumatic growth, post-traumatic resiliency, right? I know you, I can see on your face that you like that too, but I'm jumping ahead.
How many steps do you take if you have a rock in your shoe? Not many. Well, if you have to walk on a prosthetic leg that does not fit, it is like walking with a rock in your shoe. Although there are many innovations when it comes to prosthetic feet and knees, the comfort of a prosthesis begins with a fit of the socket. Michael Kenny is a certified prosthetist who has been walking on a prosthetic leg since he was 16 years old, after losing his leg to a motorcycle accident. He is committed to fitting prosthetic legs so they are comfortable, intimate, and optimize ease of walking. Motility Prosthetics has been in Hot Springs since 2015, but Michael Kenny has been building legs for over 25 years. All fabrication is done on site. There are no delays from having to ship to a fabrication house. Adjustments can easily be made on the spot. Motility means the spontaneous ability to move. At Motility Prosthetics, we want you to be able to walk on your prosthetic leg with a sense of spontaneity. Call for a free consultation, 501-620-4800.
So you're giving some resiliency skills to deal with
the
that.
The resiliency, this is probably the majority that come in. We learn the skills, and then we go into the trauma therapies. And they feel a whole lot more comfortable and able to face that therapy and do that therapy with those skills. It's not just for their day-to-day, but it's going to help them through and do the therapies also. And then there's the set that comes in, and as I said, we jump right in.
Yeah.
And we might have our intake session, and I might teach them one quick skill in the intake session, and then that next session, we jump right in. I've actually had one intake where we jumped in.
So tell me what is jumping into what? What's that?
So that jumping in, so I do... EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy, and I do brain spotting therapy, and then I do some visualization / brain change type skills. So EMDR was founded by Francine Shapiro, and she's worked with people, lots of different backgrounds and different traumas. And as she worked with them, she noticed that their eyes would first be looking this way, and then they might look this way. Sometimes they'd be looking at her, but not really looking at her, you know. And she wondered, you know, is this movement of their eyes from one place to another as they're talking to me, is this important for their healing in the trauma? Because what happens, and what we see, is someone will come in and they're like, I've talked about it, mm-hmm. and I've talked about it, and it's never healed. Talk therapies definitely have their place, like for developing that insight and understanding mm-hmm. what the trauma is. The talk therapies really great, but the talk therapies for many people, that then there's a limit to it, and they're like, I've talked about it. It's not healing. And so Dr. Shapiro was like, I wonder if this eye movement while they're talking is important to the healing process. And so she developed an eye movement. In other words, the person would talk about the trauma, and then she would watch, have them follow her fingers through a movement for their eyes. Okay. And this eye movement mimics REM sleep, which, think about what REM sleep is. That's a high brain processing time. Really? That's where memory is consolidated. That's where things are filed and kind of processed through your system. And so the eye movement, in a sense, mimics some of REM sleep. It's also doing what we call a left to right pattern, which is what we call bilateral stimulation, which gets the right half of the brain and the left half of the brains talking to each other across that divide mm-hmm. there on your brain. So again, just helping the brain to move that information along and to get it processing, because what we call trauma is it's all about being stuck. You're mm-hmm. stuck in an emotion, you're stuck in a thought, you're stuck in a memory, you're stuck in, and so the EMDR gets that stuff moving and processing, so it's no longer stuck. And so sure enough, you know, EMDR has been around for some decades now, and there's a lot of research. It's an evidence-based mm-hmm. trauma treatment, and people heal from their trauma.
So does it actually change the brain?
In think of it as a rewiring
okay.
of your brain.
I like that.
Yeah. And so some people would say, yeah, that's a brain change. You might not be able to visually see that change while it's happening, but yeah, it's like restructuring mm-hmm. How the brain is fired and wired together. Mm-hmm. And I can talk more about that at some point.
But I know you love neurons, yes.
Yeah, we'll talk about brain change later. But yeah. So brain spotting. So that's a little bit about EMDR. Brain spotting was actually developed by Dr. David Grand, who was an EMDR specialist. He did EMDR for many years and even trained other therapists how to do EMDR. And he was working with a skater, an ice skater, doing some EMDR, and had been working with her for about a year, I think. And she had some trauma in her past with her parents, and it was impacting her ability to skate. She was hung up. She couldn't get this one element or move she needed, some triple loop, something or other, I think. Right. She couldn't get it, and they were pretty sure that it was because of her mental emotional state mm-hmm. around her trauma. And David Grand had realized that some people with the EMDR get overactivated. They get overstimulated, mm-hmm. Especially without... It's one reason I do those resiliency skills, is mm-hmm. to help prevent that overstimulation in the therapy. But he had realized that some people in the EMDR, they got overstimulated, overactivated, too mm-hmm. overwhelmed.
And what do you do with that?
Right, too yeah. overwhelmed with it. And so he had slowed down the eye movement. So instead of going at a rate, he had like really slowed it down in the eye movement, and he, I think it was called slow movement EMDR, and so he was doing slow movement EMDR with this ice skater, and he was going very slowly across her line of vision with his fingers as she was following his fingers with her eyesight, Well, he noticed at one spot that her eye was more engaged in some way. Either her pupil dilated more, or her eyes opened some more, or there was a twitch, or, you know, or eyebrow raise, something. And he got curious, and he stopped on that spot. And he ended up holding that spot and her looking at that one spot for 10 minutes. And in that 10 minutes, she actually talked about some things and processed through some things that he hadn't heard in the year that he'd worked with her. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the session ended and they were like, okay, great session, you know. The next day she called him and she was like, I've landed my triple loop.
Oh, wow.
Not just once, but 50 times in a row. Mm-hmm. And so that was the beginning of brain spotting. And so I think of brain spotting as almost as like an extension or a type of EMDR. But instead of doing a rhythmical eye movement, you're looking at one spot. And what I see happen with that one spot and what it's doing is, think for how you are in the winter months when you walk across a carpeted floor and you build up this static electricity in your body.
Great example.
And then you touch just the right kind of surface and it opens up this window, this little door for all of that electricity to leave your body. Zap, it's gone.
Yeah.
And that's what I see brain spotting doing. It's like opening up a window or an area, a door to a topic in your brain, and it lets out that activation.
Is that spot a specific traumatic memory or event?
So there are two types of spots in brain spotting. One is what we call an activation spot, and the other is what we call a resourcing spot.
Okay.
And what an activation spot is, you put your mind on that thing that's distressing to you. And we find that spot where your system is the most engaged, and we see that, that's where the door is open to that area of your brain, and you just look there. But what that's doing is it's allowing all the yuck to leave. Now, it's usually not as quick as that static electricity. I've actually seen it work in 30 seconds. Yeah. But usually it takes most of our session for that activation to go down from like a 10 being really high activation to lower.
So is that, I'm curious about that process. Are they talking about the trauma during that time? Or does it just happen, like you said, with just kind of the energy?
So one of the things about brain spotting therapy that many people like is you actually don't have to talk about it for it to work, because and let me explain a little bit about this, and I do have to go into some brain stuff here.
Yes.
So think of our brain in three major pieces for a minute. There's our hind brain, which we call our lizard brain, and that runs all those automatic processes in our body, our heart and our lungs and
that
our...
we don't have to think
right,
about.
Right, we don't have to think about it. You know, it just happens instinctually and automatically. We don't have to think, beat heart, we don't. Then we have what's called midbrain. And midbrain is got our some habitual processes and some instinctual processes, but we can also influence those and change that. For example, we have emotions. Those are part of our midbrain, but we can decide what we're going to do with that anger, and we can decide, you know, how we're going to address
it,
how we can address that, you know, how excited we are about something. And then we have our upper brain, and this is our executive functioning and thinking and planning and goal setting and evaluation and these types of processes. Most of our talk therapies traditionally have engaged upper brain. All of that. Let's think through the pattern. Let's find the pattern. Let's analyze the pattern, change the pattern. That's most upper brain stuff. Let's have insight. That's upper brain. Where EMDR and brain spotting, they go midbrain. They are addressing more habitual or instinctual processes. And so we don't have to talk about it for these therapies to do work and brain change, which is many people like. So when we find that spot in brain spotting, my clients have a choice, and they're taught this before we actually do any brain spotting, of you can talk about what you're experiencing in the brain spotting. You can tell me you know, all about what you're experiencing with the brain spotting, or you can be silent and just kind of watch what your brain is doing. Either way, your brain is going to be doing the processing.
Yeah. As you're talking about this, I'm thinking having a qualified therapist to do this is so important, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. to be able to recognize where the spot is, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes.
Certifications, trainings.
Yes. So I am what's called EMDR2 trained, and then I am brain spotting nationally certified. And so what that took was like a full weekend off-site somewhere for training, and then I had to get supervision over a year on that training.
So important that you find a person if you're thinking
there was another full weekend. I guess there were two full weekends of training.
For our listeners who are thinking about this, definitely, you know, look for a qualified provider. Kathy, we have so much more to talk about. Are you fine with, because we are out of time for, it just goes by so fast, it's so fascinating. So I think that it would be helpful if we stop here and have our listeners pick up in the next podcast. So let's end this one with telling our listeners how to get in touch with you. Are you on social media? You know, those types of things. Are you accepting?
So I have a wait list right now.
Okay.
And I actually don't advertise a whole lot. I have a Psychology Today site, and I've got a little Facebook page. But most of it's word of mouth. But I'm located in the Lindell Square building, and that's...
Phone number?
My phone number is 501-617-5678.
So, although you're not accepting clients, someone could get on the wait list perhaps future. And I know you do take insurance as well.
Yes.
So, all right. So, let's stop here. Thank you so much for being in here. Such a fascinating conversation about trauma and how our brains process that. We will start the next session of the podcast. So our listeners, be sure and follow up with that one. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Healthy Hot Springs from the Razorback Camper Sales Studios. Join us every Wednesday as we discuss a different topic related to keeping hot springs healthy.